Just a warning, some of the topics we discuss in this episode are related to sexual harassment and assault.
Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to 23, the podcast for young, sharp-tongued and fucking fabulous people who love to talk shit.
As always, you will be joined by me, Bella.
And me, Kelsey.
Hey.
So look, we're just going to get stuck right in today because on Monday the 12th of October, Four Corners, which is a program on the ABC, they aired a joint investigation with HAC and it was titled A Predator's Playground. And this investigation rocked us to the core. So yeah, we're just going to get stuck right in. I had my heart in my throat the whole time.
My heart is still in my throat right now, even talking about it. Like, my heart is racing.
The episode was centered on five stories from five incredibly brave women: Emily, Beth, Brooke, Paula and Lauren. It was incredibly harrowing to see that rawness on screen, and for me it hit so hard because all of us have either experienced something like this ourselves or know somebody who has. All the people that appeared on the show were so incredibly generous with their stories, especially Paula's parents, Barbara and Simon. Paula was sexually assaulted by Glenn Hartland, colloquially known as the Tinder rapist, and tragically died before he was sentenced to 14 years in jail in 2019. The investigation was sparked by a call out on Triple J asking people to come forward with their stories. More than 400 people responded. So some really alarming figures came out of it. Of the 48 people who reported sexual assault on the app, only 11 received responses, and those responses were automated, generic messages that really provided no information.
No solace either.
Yeah.
Like, no backup that Tinder was actually going to do something about it.
Yeah, there was no
confirmation that they were going to take action.
Yeah. So many things came up for me while watching this, but I want to know, Belle, what was something that stuck with you?
This whole episode was a shock and a wake-up call for me. As somebody that uses dating apps frequently and has been on dates with people that are outside of my normal social circles, I have not experienced anything close to the stories that were discussed through this program. However, I have, you know, had friends and heard of stories similar to this, which when I hear them, they always rock me, and I always am so shocked and taken aback at just the horror that people can inflict on other human beings. There are a few key points that I took out of this particular episode that really hit home for me. Because I'm so happy to interact on these platforms on a regular basis and I use them so often, their point that they made about vetting people, which I know that we've had a discussion about, is definitely something that I was aware of, but I don't think consciously, that we're so happy to match with people and have a chat and share so much about ourselves so quickly without actually understanding who that person is. That person is still a stranger. If you don't know them, if they're not in your social circle, if you have no, you know, direct kind of connection with them through anybody else, this is somebody that if you walk down the street, you would not know them. The image that I came up with was, if I was going to walk down the street and bump into somebody, would I share that much about myself? No. Mm-mm. Because it's on a dating app, I should also have that mentality. And that is something that I've become so aware of in this particular episode.
Well, we've just become so accustomed to that ease of swiping, that gamification. It's fun. And instead of judging people based off merit and character and personality, we're judging people off their looks. And I think that is one of the biggest downfalls of moving our dating worlds to apps, because we lose that human interaction. We always know that how we talk online will never replace face-to-face interactions. Like you said, we just do not know who these people are, and it's really easy to pretend that we do when
you lull yourself into a false sense of security so quickly, into thinking that talking to these people online is fine and not actually acknowledging the severity or like the weight that sharing information about yourself with a stranger actually holds, because it is in an online context and it does feel so familiar. If you're familiar with the app, you feel like you're in a safe space. You feel like you have control and power, when really you don't. You just don't, not to the extent that you think that you do. One of my other key points that I took out of this that I actually had a discussion about with someone yesterday, and she made a really valid point. Somebody that is older than us but has used dating apps frequently as well. She said dating apps give people the license to behave badly with anonymity. And I think that's a really great way of phrasing what dating apps actually allow people to do. Because you go onto dating apps with great intentions. Personally, I've gone onto dating apps with good intentions, meeting people, having a chat, making connections. There are so many people that utilize dating apps, and a percentage of them use them for negative reasons. And we need to keep that in our mind constantly. You cannot ever let that thought go. And you need to be conscious and aware that if stuff starts getting uncomfortable, or if the conversation starts veering somewhere that you're not okay with, these dating apps facilitate these interactions to occur, and you need to have strategies in place to unmatch, report, have these conversations with people. And in the end, if you're not comfortable, stop using these apps.
Yeah, I think it's that whole idea of trolls as well. We say things online that we would never say in real life. And I think on dating apps, when there's higher stakes on dating apps, like the likelihood is that you're going to meet these people in real life. The stakes are so much higher than, you know, commenting on a news article or a meme. So I think we need to remember that when we are using these apps. But look, the investigation brought up some really pertinent themes of the failures and the downfalls of these apps. One of the biggest ones had to do with Tinder and just the functionality of Tinder and how the program actually works. So Brooke, one of the girls that was in this report, she was saying that she matched with somebody and then she was raped horrifically when she met this person in real life. The way that the app works is that you can unmatch somebody, and when you unmatch somebody, all of your conversation, all of your history with this person is deleted, and you have no way of finding this person unless you've taken screenshots, or unless your conversation was about where you live and what your last name is. But the app itself doesn't give those things away. And I think it was designed, I guess, with victims in mind, like the whole unmatch, I guess,
functionality.
Yeah. Like that was designed so then if I felt uncomfortable, I could unmatch somebody and never had to speak to them again. But now predators are kind of taking advantage of that and using it to
keep it to stay anonymous.
It's like their getaway car. That's
exactly
how I look at it.
Exactly. I think it is really important to note that this functionality was developed with users in mind as a protective mechanism. It is really crucial, because I think that when we're looking at apps like this, when we're looking at social media platforms in general, we're so quick to judge the functionality and how it's can be utilized negatively. It is really important to look at what purpose it was actually designed for in the first place, to then understand how far it's been taken out of its desired function.
Well, okay, this is a quote from Emily, and she said, "It makes me mad that this platform is making money off people who are being hurt, and then they can't even respond properly when people are hurt. What are you doing with your money?" I think that perfectly summarizes the frustrations people are having with this app. They're what, a multi-billion dollar company. Surely you can do more than just an automated response when people are reporting sexual assaults.
This was a really interesting point for me, because as users of Tinder, you don't consider it being a revenue-based business model. You don't. You consider Tinder to be a connection-based platform which they've created for users to connect with others and to build strong relationships. In reality, it's not. In reality, it's about generating revenue. All they want is our money.
They make it easy to forget that we live in a capitalist society.
But they make it so easy to spend money on the program as well. The whole functionality of Tinder prompts you constantly to put your credit card details in and to pay more money. As just a casual user of it, someone that's never spent any money on Tinder, you forget that that's the whole point of it. That's the reason. They don't give two shits about you creating a wonderful, beautiful connection and maybe meeting the love of your life. They care about how much money you're going to give to them.
I think we can see that in the design with that gamification, with choosing people based on looks instead of character and merit.
But it's so easy to ignore that or to turn a blind eye to it, because you don't want to believe that they're there to take money off you. You want to believe that they've created this app to benefit you, when in reality, they just haven't.
Mm. Another really alarming thing that came up in this was the failures of the police. Going back to Emily, her rapist took videos of the sexual assault. She went to the police and she reported that. She was assured that they would retrieve those videos. And what did the police do? They went to this guy's house, warned him, and then left. They did absolutely nothing. If that's not negligence, then what is? Because the police are there to protect us. We pay them to protect us. And
they fall so short.
So short. Like, Emily had the address, had the name of the person.
She wrote down all of his details. She had all of the evidence to substantiate her claims. And yet nothing was followed up.
Nothing came out of it.
Another point that runs off from this in regards to police negligence and these cases not being dealt with in the correct way. One of the cases in this program discussed that they reported the assault to the police, but they said because she hadn't explicitly said no in the sexual act that they couldn't do much about it. I think this particular comment rocked me the most because being a young woman, you were constantly in situations with men, but just in general in the workplace, in, you know, university, in your social circles, where you're faced with arguing or stating your case or sharing your opinion. And a lot of the time we shy away because it can be really difficult and we do put ourselves out on a limb. But in this particular case, yes means yes and everything else means no. We have to remember this, and this has to be part of our
education.
Education and this legal system. Consent is so fucking crucial. And the fact that they had it, for me, it was just the audacity of just completely discrediting her case because she didn't use one particular word.
A two-letter word.
A two-letter fucking word. I just was so, I'm so outraged at our legal system that they have such contempt for people's well-being and safety that because they didn't use one specific phrase that apparently they can't do anything.
Well, this is echoed throughout all. Most of the time when women are going to the police, it's about assault or domestic violence. And the thing that pisses me off is that there is no urgency placed on our problems. There is complete lack of respect. How are we living in 2020 and this is still the stories that we are saying? How are we living in 2020 and we still have a pretty much useless police force when it comes to the issues that matter and happen to women? Like, how is that still the case?
It was actually, interestingly enough, I've spoken to Kelsey about this. A couple of months ago, I actually did report somebody. I went to a police station to report somebody. I went to a beach with my friend one afternoon, and as we were walking back to the car, there was a gentleman sitting on the beach. And he was naked and he was touching himself and invited us to come and join him. At the time, we were so shocked. We just ran back to the car and we were laughing because we were so taken aback at what had just happened.
I think that's a lot of the natural responses that we have. You can't really believe that it's happening.
No, so. And I was so shocked. And, you know, lots of people do laugh in the face of discomfort or, you know, something extreme happening like this. And we ended up having a discussion, me and my friend that I was with, about whether we should report it or not. The argument that we both made was that was a really low-level situation. You know, he didn't touch us. He didn't come near us. Although he was suggestive and although he was exposing himself, we were not harmed in any way physically. However, if we were not together and if it was just one of us, what could have been different? If what? The woman was younger, what could have been different? There are so many variables in these situations that we felt like we had an obligation to say something. So we ended up going to the police station and talking to them about it. The police were helpful, but there are so many gaps in the measures that they can take based on the situation that occurred. Because he didn't touch us, they can't follow him up. Because he just suggested things rather than like actually actioning them, they couldn't do anything about it. We could make a statement, and if we wanted to make a statement, they'd then find people that looked like him based on our description and bring them in, and then we could decipher which one was him.
Would they actually do that though? Because I have a sneaking suspicion that that would have just all been talk and never have been actioned.
However, the catch was we had to go in and identify the person, and if we did that, they that would person would are. See us. So it wasn't an anonymous investigation in regards to us going in and identifying the person. Our identities would have been exposed had we gone in to identify the person, which if it had been anything more severe than what it was, if you had actually been assaulted or harassed, I could not imagine having to go and identify somebody that did that to you and your identity being exposed to that person and you having to point them out and them watching you point them out.
Yeah, I mean,
what a fucking horrific process.
Yeah, like you said, I cannot imagine having to be in a situation like that. And I think this investigation really did point out a lot of the flaws with the way that we handle sexual assault cases in our judicial system, even just in society. The way that we talk about these things needs to change. There is absolutely no accountability on either side. There's no accountability on the police's side, and there's no accountability on the organizational side either. At the end of the day, Tinder and Match, is that their?
Match.com is the corporate company that owns Tinder.
It's an American company. In Australia, they have so much power, so much money that they can quite literally get away with whatever they want to get away with. How is that possible? State Crime Commander Assistant Commissioner Stuart Smith appeared on the show. He pretty much straight out said that the apps do really nothing to help their investigations.
However, at the same time, he pretty much said that the police didn't do that much either. Yeah. It was the simultaneous blaming of the organization and also inadvertently admitting that the police don't have that much control or power over these situations either, which just shocked me.
What I took out of that was that nobody's held accountable and nobody's doing anything about nobody being held accountable. And that is just not okay. It is not okay. And it's not, quite frankly, it's not good enough to the victims that have to go through these horrific assaults. How it is 2020, how is this still a thing?
I think that this is a really interesting point because it comes into who has the responsibility to change at this point, who has the responsibility to make this cultural shift and make this legal shift and create new regulations and build safety measures in this context. I don't think personally there is a one size fits all solution to this case. I think we're going to have to work collaboratively. I think the organization and the legal systems have responsibility for the bottom line of making these changes, but I do think that we as users need to express our concerns and be vocal and be active in pushing the organization and pushing law enforcement for making these changes.
That would be great if voices were enough, but action is better. Do not use these apps until they change, because
that's what I mean. Do that. You know what I mean? Do that. Delete it. Let's all fucking stop using apps that aren't protecting people and aren't keeping people safe.
Tinder and Match did release a statement. Bella, you have a quote from this.
This is in rebuttal to the Four Corners episode that was released. Tinder released their response on the 12th of October, the same day that the episode was released. So Tinder said, "We have heard from survivors and we are acting. We strive to continually improve our safety systems and are always ready to take further action when shortcomings are identified." Reporting in app and to our consumer care teams is an important way we learn about potential issues and bad actors and allow us to take appropriate action. Over the next coming weeks, we will be reaching out to federal and state law enforcement and safety officials across Australia to set up meetings with our safety and legal teams so we can better explain the tools and resources we have dedicated to helping their efforts. We also want to hear directly from these officials on ways we can work together more seamlessly in the future. I think that this is fucking bullshit, to be honest.
The thing that pissed me off about this statement was when they said, "We will try to explain our, you know, regulations and procedures." What regulations and procedures? You don't need to explain them. What you need to do is redesign them and just, you know what, just get rid of them and start from scratch.
I think we just have to understand the injustice of this particular situation because, as previously stated, they're a revenue-based company. Tinder's never going to put these measures into place. It's going to cost too much money. Realistically, unless there is some, you know, huge movement, social movement or a petition against Tinder to make these changes and to make them now, they're never going to make them. And this is what I'm talking about when we as users need to need to do something. We need to do something because unfortunately Tinder won't make these changes because they don't want to put money into these changes.
The only way that Tinder is going to make a change is if the money in their pocket starts dwindling, and the way that that happens is if people stop using the apps. And I think, Bella, you brought up a really good point before where you said if coronavirus wasn't a thing, I don't think their revenue would be. I mean, the conversations that I have with our friends, they're saying that they're kind of getting sick of these apps. They want to meet people in real life. They want people to come up to them in the spice aisle of Woolworths and have a conversation with them.
And say, hey, you little spicy senorita.
Hey, little spicy. I do not think that Tinder would be in the position that it is financially if it wasn't for coronavirus. Because like I said, the conversations that I'm having, people are turning away from apps, not just because of this, just because people are getting tired of the ghosting, of people just being assholes, of people soliciting dick pics. Or sending unwarranted dick pics. We do not want that anymore. And I think Tinder's going to have to really change their game and either improve drastically with its whole design. Otherwise, it's only going to be a matter of time before they just become completely redundant.
In a fantasy land, because I've thought about this, in my hypothetical fantasy land of wonderful online dating things, there would be just this brand new app to the market that is so ethically straight line and wonderful. And you had to get identity checks, police checks, all of these things, all of these regulations that were put in place prior to your profile even going live. One report of anything, any type of bad behavior, harassment, rude comments, you were done and you're out and you never come back.
How good would it be if Tinder had a mechanism that kind of, I mean, oh, it's one of those things where it's, there are huge debates around like data and privacy concerns, but it would be great if there was a way that Tinder kind of scanned messages and could detect when a message was unsolicited or was rude or was harassment. It would be great, but then of course...
But they can see all that anyway. They have access. Anything that we share in these sites is their IP.
Well, in that case, why don't they have monitoring systems that can detect when people are being assholes?
Because it costs money.
The thing is that technically they have enough money to put these mechanisms into place. They're a multi-billion dollar company. The issue is that it takes too much money out of the pockets of the CEOs and the people in the higher up positions. That's why they don't want to do it.
And it also takes too much money out of developing more ways to get more money out of us. They spend money on generating new ways to entice us into spending money.
Yeah.
That's what they spend their money on. These mechanisms aren't going to generate any more revenue for them. There's no return on investment, so why would they do it?
Oh, it's so love capitalism. It's great.
It's the fucking worst.
But Belle, obviously I don't use dating apps because I'm in a relationship, but is this going to change the way that you use these apps?
Abso-fucking-lutely. You bet that I am going to delete them all, and you bet that I'm going to be having conversations with people about, look, I'm not going to discredit using dating apps because a lot of people have met their partners. I mean, you matched with Nathan on Tinder the first time.
I did.
So I there are so many positive aspects to this. My issue is the culture of these companies and the values that they are operating off and their complete contempt for human safety and well-being. And I am not ever going to support an organization, regardless of how entertaining it is and regardless of the options that I might meet somebody, I'm never going to support an organization that functions like this. If you're still using dating apps, I'm not discrediting you whatsoever. If that's something that you enjoy doing, if you've met your partner off that, that's so wonderful and I'm so happy for you. All I want is for people to be aware of why these companies are operating and the issues that they are exemplifying in our society.
And also just be safe when you're using these apps. If you are using them, please be safe. Spend that time vetting them. Ask yourself, would I give this much information away if I had met this person in the street? Would I be asking these questions if I had met this person in real life? Just be safe on these apps.
And yeah, and be critical. Like, we're critical in all other aspects of our lives.
Hey guys, I'm just jumping in while editing because Match Group, the parent company of Tinder, has announced that it will be changing some of its safety policies. They said, "We have heard from survivors and we are acting." It's
updated some things like its reporting functions so users are directed to support services. And they've also said that they can still retrieve messages even after someone has been unmatched. So these are all good things, but it's just how it rolls out in real life. We hear this stuff all the time when big companies are trying to put out fires. So I guess, yeah, we will just see how it goes. And hopefully for the safety of everybody, they do work. I think the reason why this piece was so well received, because it was done so well. Avani Dias from Hack, she did such an amazing job reporting on this. They covered all their bases. They were bipartisan in their reporting. They were objective observers in a landscape that's so saturated with bullshit. 1 in 6 articles about sexual assault are victim blaming. That is too much, considering how much content there is about domestic violence and sexual assault. They did such a good job on reporting on this issue, and it was so nice to see a piece of journalism that was authentic and was
worthwhile. Just really fucking worthwhile.
I think we have to remember that the way that the media talks about these issues completely influences the way that we see them in society and the way that we act on them in society. I think the Daily Mail is a great example of how not to report on domestic violence and sexual assault, because
just how not to report in general.
Yeah, pretty much. I highly recommend everybody go listen to the episode of Shameless called The One Where the Daily Mail Breaks Us if you want to know more about media representation and how journalists should and shouldn't be reporting.
I actually have a question for you. At uni last semester, I did a class and my lecturer was a lady named Dr. Emma Jane. She's a cybercrime female online social media academic. So she studies the realms of females interacting online, misogyny online, how it impacts our society and how the internet has grown into this place that is allowing misogyny to occur on a level that we've never seen before. And she made a really interesting point in her book. It's called Misogyny Online, A Short and Brutish History. She stated, "Are these graphic articulations of misogynist vitriol an internet phenomenon, or are they the types of things men have always said and thought about women in private?" And I think that's a really interesting question. On dating apps, not all of these situations end in harassment or assault in a physical context. A lot of them are
verbal.
And through the application, through people saying, sending unsolicited dick pics, making horrific comments, being completely misogynistic and horrible to women online. She makes a comment that while the internet did not invent sexism, it is amplifying it in unprecedented ways. And I think we really need to keep that in our minds when we're interacting on these platforms, that we experience this in everyday life as females. That's part of being female. It's horrific, and I wish it wasn't the case, but in reality it is. But I just think we need to keep in mind that these apps do exemplify these kind of horrific behaviors. And if you are dealing with this, there are resources, there are people that you can talk to, and you need to be seeking help, because this should not be happening. It's not okay, and we have to stop it.
I think we have to be really critical about what we consume when media organizations are talking about these things, because like I said, the way that the media reports on this issue frames the way that we as society view that issue. So we need to be really critical of what we're consuming, because that will ultimately impact the way that you see that situation. And this goes for both males and females, because a lot of the times women do a lot of victim blaming as well.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately for us, the patriarchy has done a very good job at convincing women that other women are threats, and the media certainly solidifies that type of sentiment. So we need to do a really good job at breaking that stigma down, because we need to be lifting each other up, especially in these situations.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think we all need to change our first thought when we're interacting with stories like this, consuming content on this topic. Our first thought should always be along the lines of, I cannot believe this happened. How do we?
I think that's all we have time for today. I know I feel just drained. Like we said at the start of this, it could have been any one of us, and it makes me really upset.
This hit really close to home, and we all need to be having these conversations. We need to be having these conversations with our friends, and not just our female friends. We need to be talking about this with our male friends, with our brothers, with our dads, with every person in our life that could be in some way impacted by these stories, it's so important to be opening this discussion and having this discussion constantly. And we will continue to try and talk about this on our podcast as much as we can, because it's something that we care about so much. And we hope that people that listen to this are in some way informed, have some, you know, response that ends up being positive in your life in some way or another.
You can enact some changes with the ways that you date online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are a few resources online that you can contact. White Ribbon, their number is 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732, or Lifeline, which is 1-3-1-1-1-4, 13 11 14. If anything that we have discussed in this podcast has brought up any negative feelings for you or has triggered you in any way, please reach out. Please
seek help
and utilize the resources that are at our disposal.
Thanks, Belle, for sharing that story with us.
That's okay. I just hope that it helps women understand that we have options. And even if something like that really scary happens that really rocks you, we can enact change from it. And we can be better, and we can all be better. So let's all work towards that. Okay. Love you, Kels.
Love you, boo. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.